This is Jackson Peterson, and I'm a sales agronomist for CHS Ag Services in Humboldt, Minnesota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Thursday Farm News here on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Jamie Dickerman, along with Randy Conant in studio. We'll hear a report from Don Wick as well. Trump administration announcing this morning Canada and Mexico will not be required to pay tariffs on anything covered by the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement until April 2nd, when the reciprocal tariffs will take effect. According to pro-farmer analyst Jim Wiesmeyer, there's another controversy surrounding tariffs.
Trade experts are warning that these new tariffs against Canada and Mexico go against what's called Chapter 98 of the Harmonized Tariff Schedule of the United States. And if so, that could undermine free trade principles, etc. So they charge that Trump may not be on legal ground to actually have these tariffs to begin with. Now, to be fair, the Trump administration says that the tariffs are allowed under what they call Article 32.2 of USMCA for national security reasons. But again, trade experts and trade officials disagree with that assessment. So we have another controversy here.
Wiesmeyer criticizing the inconsistent approach from the Trump administration.
This is an etch-a-sketch approach to trade policy. I'm writing special reports every other hour almost now because it's not a well-thought-out strategy to me. They need to get their act together. What are they doing? One day, the White House press secretary says there will be no exemptions. The very next day, they announce exemptions relative to the USMCA and the automobile. So you can see that this thing is very fluid, and no wonder the market is so volatile right now, because it's trading one headline to another.
CHS Ag Services hosting its annual meeting and Ag Industry Day today in Grand Forks. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Don Wick has more from the Alaris Center.
Over the past year, CHS acquired West Central Ag Services. The nation's largest farm cooperative is now investing in the region with a major grain facility at Warren, Minnesota. CHS Executive Vice President Rick Dusick said these investments speak to the importance of this territory.
This area for CHS is huge. I mean, up and down the Red River Valley, both sides of the river, is really important for us on grain, on agronomy, on energy, and I think we're showing it by the way we're investing. We want to be here. We want to serve the grower really well, add a lot of value, and we're really leaning hard on preparing to and positioning ourselves to serve the grower of the future, because they're getting bigger, more sophisticated. Speed and space needs are completely different than they were even 5 or 10 years ago. And I think some of the things we're doing that you so eloquently pointed out are proof that we're leaning in hard.
So how do you see that landscape changing if you put out that crystal ball 5, 10 years from now?
Well, I think, I think that the trends of consolidation will continue on the farm, in the ag input and grain industry. I think when I look at the kind of the broader marketplace and the market access that we need and are expected to bring to our farmers is more globally connected enterprise supply chains from the farmer all the way to the end user, strategic assets, high-speed assets all along that supply chain. I think those are the companies that are going to win long-term, and that's how we're trying to position our company.
Dusick said CHS is well-positioned for spring inputs. The tariff situation may impact the fertilizer situation long-term if it continues, but the supplies are in place for the spring rush. From the CHS Ag Services annual meeting in Grand Forks, I'm Don Wick on the Red River Farm Network.
Grain markets started lower, but now trading higher today. Total Farm Marketing's John Heinberg said it was due to the ever-changing news on tariffs.
But then Secretary Letnik came out with a statement through President Trump regarding the tariffs, regarding Canada and Mexico, and saying that there could be some reprieve in some of those tariffs based off the USMCA trade agreement that we put together here a handful of years ago. So that was got the market a little more relieved regarding those tariffs between those two countries and the United States. Obviously, Mexico, a major buyer of U.S. corn this year. In fact, we got about 360 million bushels of corn that we haven't shipped yet to Mexico, and then on the other side of it too, just the impacts across the other some of those other other products. So it just got the market feeling a little bit more relieved about some of the tariff issues that are out there that caused that strong sell-off here earlier in the week.
Corn Belt marketing analyst Tyler Endress says the livestock market, though, a bit two-sided and volatile.
Just a lot of headline risk. You know, it felt like we had finally kind of worked through the screwworm situation coming in from Mexico, and that maybe imports would get better. And then, you know, the tariff news came back out. There was another move higher in feeder cattle, especially the cash cattle and the live cattle. They did not follow this time, the feeder cattle market, as much.
Pipestone, Minnesota farmer, past chair of the U.S. Meat Export Federation and past president of the National Pork Producers Council, Randy Spronk, says trade agreements are especially important for adding value to the livestock industry.
CAFTA, which would be Central America Free Trade Agreement, along with DR, CAFTA-DR, you look back at the data here and from last year, from 2024, you know, some of those countries are up 40 to 60%, not only on value, but also in volume. And so it's really showing you roll up those countries from Guatemala to El Salvador to Nicaragua to Costa Rica. You add them communally together, and actually they'd come in, you know, around where Canada is. So they could be in top five, you know, of our exports.
Spronk would like to see more trade agreements.
Free trade agreements have been very good to the pork industry as we go forward here. The environment that we're in here right now, obviously we don't think free trade agreements are going to be able to make it through Congress or through current administration, but there again, there's going to be some reciprocal trade agreements or maybe bilateral trade agreements, so we just need to be ready. And so we've clearly identified, you know, some of the Asian countries. Obviously, you know, there's funding for RAP program through U.S. Meat Export Federation. You know, that's going to be Malaysia and Indonesia, so there's opportunities out there, but there again, there needs to be somebody to take the opportunity, start those markets, grow those markets, because there is great opportunity for our products.
One sector of the U.S. economy that will feel the impact of tariffs is energy, which will increase costs ahead of spring planting. President Trump put a 10% tariff on fuel imports from Canada. Gas Buddy's head of petroleum analysis, Patrick DeHaan, says consumers will feel that impact soon.
Well, the status is, at least for now, the tariffs are in effect on Canadian energy of 10%, and that is going to start trickling down to the end user in the weeks ahead. But there's certainly a very different situation depending on where you might live across the U.S. The Northeast, the New England area generally receives refined products from a Canadian refinery. Those areas will see impacts faster. But in the Midwest, refineries generally process a heavy slate of Canadian crude oil due to the nature of how slow that crude oil gets into the United States and then takes time to be refined. The impacts throughout areas of the Midwest, the Great Lakes and the Rockies, will probably see a much lower level impact that is much more delayed than compared to what we expect in New England.
DeHaan says Americans may not know that Canada fills a lot of U.S. fuel needs.
Well, a lot of what Canada sends us at 4.5 million barrels of oil per day, Canada is the largest source of crude oil imported in the United States. And a lot of what we use here in the Midwest has been fed by Canadian oil through U.S.-based refineries. So a good portion of what you may be farming with in agro-consumption, as well as things like gasoline and jet fuel, is derived from that Canadian crude oil, the 4.5 million barrels a day that flows through much of the United States Midwest.
USDA's weekly export sales report for the week ending February 27th shows combined old and new crop corn sales of 961,000 metric tons. That's 4% more than the previous week, but 35% less than the four-week average. Old and new crop soybean sales of 408,000 metric tons are 2% less than the previous week, but 8% more than the four-week average. Combined old and new crop wheat sales of 416,000 tons are 52% more than the previous week, 17% less than the four-week average.
U.S. Class 1 railroads originated 20,000 grain carloads during the week ending February 22nd. That's 15% less than the previous week, 24% less than last year. The average March secondary rail car bids and offers, $478 above tariff, $40 less than the previous week, $497 lower than the same week a year ago. The cost to ship a metric ton of grain from the Gulf Coast to Japan, up 1% at $46.50 a metric ton. The rate to ship from out of the Pacific Northwest to Japan, $27.50 a metric ton, also 1% higher than the previous week.
North Dakota House Ag Committee meeting today to discuss SB 2086, which concerns pesticide certification standards. North Dakota Department of Ag's Pesticide and Fertilizer Division Director Lucas Wagner testifying in favor of the bill.
Yes, 2017 was a long time ago. It took that long for the EPA to review every state and get back to us. Previously in North Dakota, if you were a private applicator, you could directly supervise someone who wasn't certified with as long as you were within 30 minutes. The EPA decided that the options for direct supervision were either to get rid of direct supervision, or the other option was to have an annual training for the uncertified people that you would have to keep records for, plus WPS training would be required for that as well, the Worker Protection Standard training that would have to be done annually as well. Andrew Thosteson put this together, and his view was is that it's easier to become certified in North Dakota than it is would be to do those trainings and keep the records.
Some committee members raising concerns about the accessibility of training and testing under the new rules. Representative Sue Ann Olson questioning whether enough certification opportunities would be available for seasonal farm workers, expressing concerns about potential disruptions to farm operations.
Now all of a sudden, we're making it really hard for farmers to operate because it's convenient for somebody sitting in an office somewhere to only do it at certain times.
Wagner clarifying that while group training sessions are typically held from November to April, individual testing can be arranged through county extension agents. Despite concerns, the committee recommended a do-pass vote by a 7-5 margin.
The Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer climbed to 152 in February, 11 points higher than January. An improvement in the current situation of U.S. farms drove the stronger sentiment among producers. The current conditions index hit 137, 28 points higher than in January. The future expectations index rose only 3 points in February to 159. This month's current conditions index capped a long climb from late summer and early fall 24 when the index bottomed out at 76. Recent crop price recovery, anticipated federal aid coming, and a strong livestock sector contributing to the optimism.
Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network, Clean Fuels Alliance CEO Danelle Rehagen says uncertainty continues to surround that 45Z tax credit.
Right now, we're lacking some certainty from the Treasury Department on how that tax credit is going to be implemented. So lack of certainty to taxpayers makes people nervous. So we actually have about half of our production was idled in January because the 45Z credit is not clear enough. And so we're working with Congress to try to, and the Treasury Department, to see what we can do to add some more meat to that bone and try to provide more clarity for the marketplace to be certain about how that credit's going to work.
Certainty is needed to entice investment into the biofuels industry.
In any business, investment's needed to grow, and so investments happen mostly where there's pretty good levels of certainty. And so where we have uncertainty, and 45Z right now is a little uncertain, it causes investment to sit and wait. And it causes production to sit and wait. I mean, nobody wants to produce a fuel, in our case, that is going to lose them money. And so until they can really understand how that 45Z program is going to work, I think there's going to be a lot of idle production.
Taking a look at the numbers here in the markets as we get closer to the close of the day. We're looking at Minneapolis wheat now in May up 7.5 at 595.5. July's up 7.75 at 610. In Chicago, May is up 6.75 at 555. In Kansas City right now, May is up 9.5, 566.5. Corn market, May is up 8.5, 464.25. July is up 7.75 at 471. And December, it's up 3.75 at 450.5. May soybeans up 16.5 at 1028.25. July up 15.75 at 1040.75. November up 12.75 at 1022.25. April live cattle down 15 cents at 196.37. In the feeders now, April is down $1.42 at 274.65. Lean hogs, April up 235 at 87.10. This is the Red River Farm Network.